It comes every year, a day meant to focus our attention and our actions on environmental responsibility and care for creation. The UN established Earth Day 51 years ago, and here we are today. The observance passed rather quietly this past Thursday, April the 22nd. The globe seems like a different place in these pandemic times. But urgent climate issues remain, and one group paying close attention is Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. I'm happy to welcome Tori Goble, national organizer and spokesperson at Young Evangelicals for Climate Action, to State of Belief Radio. Tori, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be on the show. It is great to be here and talking about our work.
Why don't you start by explaining the earthly focus of Young Evangelicals for Climate Action?
That's a great way to start the conversation. And maybe it would help if I start a little bit with my own story to explain where I'm coming from, because I grew up in a wonderful home and church environment, and we recycled and we talked about going outside and exploring God's creation. But that's really where the conversation started and ended. And so this idea that we could act on climate and care for creation as part of our Christian discipleship and witness was something that was new to me. I didn't become aware of this until college. And my story is not all that unique. Many folks at YUCA grew up in backgrounds where we just weren't talking about creation care, and we were really focused on saving souls. And while I think it's important to spread the gospel and focus on sharing Jesus' love, I see climate action as a key part of that. I believe we are called to partake, to be co-heirs with Christ in reconciling work, and climate action is a part of that.
How have the pandemic restrictions limited the work of the organization in this past year?
Yeah, so it involved a lot of last minute planning and planned changes. Sometimes plans changed multiple times. I've actually been inspired by how much folks have been able to accomplish with all of the restrictions going on. We set out to have our largest cohort of climate leadership fellows ever. Previously, our record was 8 college students, and this year we have 28 who are seeking to take action in their campus communities. And this was obviously a challenge given the very real limitations of the pandemic. And so we weren't unfortunately able to meet in person, but I was really encouraged by how folks dived in with sitting on Zoom all day to take part in necessary lessons and just having a great attitude through it. And it's been really inspiring to see what they've been able to accomplish. Just last night, I watched a film screening that a few of our fellows in Southern California at Azusa Pacific and Pepperdine University were able to host. And then they had a Q&A panel after, and they were able to bring in professors from different schools and just have a really good, robust discussion, even though they weren't able to physically gather in person. And we had a fellow who wanted to do a clothing drive to really focus on waste, particularly on college campuses. And she was able to adapt that to be COVID friendly, masks and social distancing, of course, but she was able to make it an outside event where they were able to limit people so everyone could still partake while staying safe. So it's required a lot of creativity and vision, but folks have really been able to tackle it well and stay safe while doing it. Because I think we can't ignore the climate crisis and we can't ignore the very real realities of COVID-19. And they actually intersect when we look at the ways that things like air pollution exacerbate respiratory illness. And so it's just been wonderful to see how our college fellows have stepped up to the occasion to highlight these connections and to continue their work in spite of all of these challenges.
So you actually provided a lot of options for observing Earth Day.
Yes, folks had panels where they were talking about creation care on their campuses. It wasn't just after the film screening, and folks are just really using it as an opportunity to dive in digitally, having social media challenges to raise awareness. And while it would be great to be in person, it's just not an option at this time. And I'm really thankful for the way folks are continuing to engage with Earth Day and climate action, even though they can't be physically with those that they want to be.
Do you get feedback?
Yes, definitely. I mean, folks even right now, we're just having discussions about how great it has been to be a part of online events and to learn about things they didn't know about before, and also just hear new inspiring stories about ways that people are coming together. And it's also provided access to folks they might not have been able to talk with before, like folks at other college campuses, mm-hmm. because Zoom's been able to bring them together.
Tori, if you would describe the kinds of young people that are drawn to participate in Young Evangelicals for Climate Action.
That's a great question. We have a beautiful community of folks from all different backgrounds within the church, folks who grew up hearing about climate action, Creation Care, and church, folks like me where it wasn't talked about, and then also folks where they heard that climate science was made up and that Christians have no business being involved in climate action or policy. So really folks from all over the spectrum there, but really we're all united around our faith and how our faith drives this work. For us, we're not doing this because we're Democrats or Republicans or environmentalists. We're doing this because we're Christians striving to follow after Christ, striving to bring about justice and kingdom values, and to love our neighbors mm-hmm. and to care for those who are already feeling the impacts of the climate crisis. So we really attract young people. We define young as 30 and under at YUCA. And traditionally, we've been targeting folks over the age of 18. But if you are in high school or even middle school and you're really passionate about this and exciting, feel free to read more about us online and look for ways to get involved. We've had high schoolers apply for our Climate Advocates program. And it's never too early and you're never too young to care for God's creation and start taking action as part of your faith. Mm-hmm. And just really bringing young people around to take action, folks who want to learn more. Maybe this is a newer idea to them, but they're really encouraged. For me, when I first learned about the climate crisis, I was confused why Christians weren't being more vocal about this mm-hmm. and really taking action, because I saw it connecting so deeply to my faith. And there are so many young people who have already made these connections, or folks who are trying to, and really try to bridge that gap for them.
Are there multi-faith or secular organizations that you all partner with in doing this work?
We've definitely partnered with folks outside of the faith world. We've partnered with folks multi-faith and interfaith. And what I see as so important is helping to mobilize my community of Christians, of people who grew up in the evangelical church and did not have these connections made for them necessarily in the church. And so helping to reach them and educate them, and then partnering with others to achieve this common goal of caring for creation is very important. And there's so many wonderful organizations out there doing this work.
Yeah. I know that I don't need to tell you that there are members of the evangelical community who would say climate change is God's will and therefore outside the purview of people of faith. What do you say to that kind of challenge?
I think it's really important to invite conversation where folks are willing, and just to have meaningful discussion on where these thoughts are coming from and what we're seeing in the world. The overwhelming scientific majority agrees that climate change is real. It is happening right now, and humans are the cause. As we emit greenhouse gases into the air, we are exacerbating the problem. And I would draw them back to Matthew 22, where we're called to love God and to love our neighbor. Mm-hmm. And one, as folks who love God, we are to love what he's created. We are creatures of God. We are part of creation. And so is the natural world. And we also see how we're interdependent on it, relying on God's natural world for clean air and water. And we see how things like climate change are impacting our neighbors that we're called to love, particularly those who have been marginalized by society historically and currently. We're seeing tribal and indigenous communities, Black communities, communities of color facing the worst impacts of the climate crisis. They're feeling the impacts first and worst. And as followers of Christ called to love our neighbors, we must respond. And so seeing this as a tangible expression of our faith and drawing it back to the science is really important.
Tell us something about how people can get in touch with you.
Yes, we would love if you would keep up with our work and find us. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at YEC Action. You can find us online at yecaction.org. And if you are a young person of faith who really wants to dive in with YECA, we have opportunities for you, like the Climate Advocates Program. If you are outside of our target audience and you're still really excited about what we're doing, thank you. And we would love to keep you up to date on our work. And you can sign up for emails from us. If you feel so called, you can give financially. We also are thankful for your prayers, your support of our ministry as we try to reach young people in faith-rooted climate action. So be sure to find us online, signed up for emails, and to keep up with us on social media to keep up with all the latest news. Most of our events are definitely open to folks who would want to join. And so signing up for emails and liking on social media would be the best way to find out about those opportunities.
Would you talk about the ways the planet seems to be recovering in certain areas due to decreasing in travel and pollution during this pandemic, and what message we might take away from seeing that?
Definitely. I think at the beginning of COVID-19 lockdowns, we saw a reduction in emissions because people were staying at home. And I am not quick to rejoice in that. I do not think it is worth celebrating the reduction of emissions at such a steep, painful cost. Yeah. The loss of jobs and even lives. It has just been a year marked by grief and suffering. And it's continuing. The pandemic isn't over. And I don't think it should have taken this much for emissions to go down and for folks to realize the impact we're having on the earth. And so I think as we look towards reopening and going back to quote unquote normal, we have a really unique opportunity to evaluate how we do things as a society and what values we really have. Something I've really enjoyed this year is the opportunity to dive in more with hobbies like gardening and the plants around my apartment, and just being really intentional about my friendships and my relationships with my family, even if we can't physically be together. And I think, especially as our government leaders look towards COVID-19 recovery, it's important that we use this as the opportunity that it is to really create a better world coming out of this, to not just go back to business as usual with fossil fuels pumping through the air, with extreme health disparities. And so it's important that we look at investing in clean energy and clean energy jobs. I think the upcoming infrastructure discussions are a good chance for us to look at the ways that our system is just not working and the ways that it is deeply broken and hurting people, and really recover from that well and individually think about, you know, what our values are and how we can continue living a more intentional lifestyle, even as things open back up.
Tori Goebel is national organizer and spokesperson at Young Evangelicals for Climate Action. Tori, tell us one more time the website so people will write it down.
You can find us online at yecaction.org.
Tori, thank you so much for being with us, and we hope to see you again.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here, and thank you all to the listeners for tuning in.
Now, before we go, I want to take a minute to share with you an experience that I found both uncomfortable and stunning this past week. Regular listeners will recall my comments 2 weeks ago in which I referenced 16-year-old Stella Keating becoming the first transgender teen to testify before the U.S. Congress. I was making an impassioned plea for a concerted effort to stop the flood of vicious, mean-spirited, and often religion-cloaked legislative assaults on the rights and even the very identities of transgender persons in this country. I am far from alone in making clear over and over again that I stand as an ally with each of God's children, not in spite of, but because of my religious convictions and my ministry as a Christian faith leader. But still, too few people hear that kind of statement. Which is why when I received a moving letter this week from Lisa Keating, Stella's mom, I was grateful, but I was also saddened. Without disclosing what may have been intended as private sentiments, let me just say that Lisa expressed surprise that I was raising up her daughter's brave actions with affirmation and with approval. I understand why she made the comment, but what does that say about the state of public religion in this country? A loving parent is surprised to hear an ordained faith leader publicly express support, affirmation, respect, and, yes, blessing for her teenaged daughter. If this is such a surprise, think how profoundly we have failed in being the light of the world and the salt of the earth. I know so many people who share these same values of inclusivity and respect for all, but we're not being heard by people who instead are being wounded, rejected, and isolated in the false name of religion. Friends, please do not remain silent. You'll never know what good your words of support, affirmation, and love might do for our neighbors who are under brutal attack right now simply for who they are, for their families, for their loved ones, and for their friends if you simply remain silent. Lisa, thank you so much for your letter. Thank you for your beautiful work with My Purple Umbrella. And thank you for giving me one more reason to say, these are our children. These are our siblings. These are we. Let's start acting like it. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. Go to stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform, and take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. And I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week. One person for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.